folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's E-M-I-L dot G-O-R-G-E-E-S, emil.gorgis at tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so we're back with a JREP panel, minus Matt, our Akia expert, who was probably out in the Japanese countryside chasing monkeys or exploring haunted houses or whatnot. And this time we dig a bit deeper into home loans and investment loans. Who exactly can borrow from Japanese lenders and when? Timing as far as residency and employment go is apparently a big factor. It needs to be properly planned for. Is it worth getting an investment loan in your country of residence or from a non-Japanese lender? We also talk a bit about the country's many struggling onsen or natural hot spring resorts who were hit hard by the pandemic and are now prime pickings for foreign-based property and hospitality funds. Segue into the mentality of going to an onsen, getting naked with strangers. What do you do with your tattoos? If, like me, you have a few of those. And then we sign off by talking creative and collaboration spaces. What are they? Do they make sense investment-wise? Themed share houses. And we finally conclude with a short chat about renovations and loans for renovations, whether as a part of a property purchase or for a property you already own. So nice, long, diverse conversation there with Tracy and Emil. Lean back, enjoy the banter, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, Japan Real Estate Experts panel, JREP. Back in
we're the short. House. We're short. Matt, I had questions for you today, brother.
Yeah. What's up, Matt? We miss you.
Can you hear him? Was he going to jump on today?
He was, and then he's driving somewhere. He's
Okay. No
yes,
worries.
Yeah, he's stuck in the car somewhere. So, okay.
But then we can introduce ourselves. Go, Tracy.
We can introduce ourselves. So I usually don't get a word in edgewise, so I'm going to go first.
Yeah.
So my name is Tracy. I am the Minpaku short-term rental expert. I've been doing short-term rentals in Tokyo for 10 years. I do my own properties. I do a combination of rental arbitrage as well as management. And also I teach people how to maximize their profits in short-term rentals all over the world. So that's me. Neil.
Thanks. My name is Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo, and I help people find their personal homes, their own family homes. We work as a regular real estate agency, and we also act as a mortgage broker. So anything finance related, we have agreements and loan officers at the mega banks assigned to our agency. So we can handle all the loan and financing and mortgage for you on your behalf. Thank you. And Ziv, over to you.
Yeah, so I'm Ziv. I'm a co-founder and been running Nippon Tradings International for the last 10 years. And we basically help people purchase, manage, and sell mainly investment properties anywhere in Japan, holiday homes anywhere in Japan, land and development, land for development anywhere in Japan. And this last week, I've also received the title of producer. I was going to tell you about that.
Whoa.
We're shooting some videos and footage for some machias, beautiful luxury machias in Kyoto. And we were recruiting for
for actors, models, for people to participate in the videos. And Mitch, the photographer who was recruiting them, he said, "Oh, can I put you on a group? Can I put you on a group call with one of the models?" And I said, "Yes." And then he introduced me. "This is him. He's the producer." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Is that what I am?"
Because I saw your message. I was like, "Go ahead, Tracy."
So you, the photo shoot is for selling these properties or?
No, for promoting them for accommodation for domestically. So for workations, family stays, for friend reunions, or anybody who just wants to go to Kyoto, couple retreats, what have you.
Who's the company who's doing it?
So they're owned by Mita Securities, which is like a fund asset management company. They're based here in Japan and also in Hong Kong.
Mita Securities.
Yeah, Mita.
How's their guest? When you're there, are you actually going to go to Kyoto to have a look?
Of course, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Excellent. Well, check their guest experience. If they need a consultant on making sure that they've got all their ducks in a row for workations. Yes, I can audit their listings. That's what I
definitely do. They definitely need help with marketing, which is where we come in.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what are we
talking about today?
So I want to bring up I had two inquiries this week, which I think are very relevant because they are regarding mortgages and financing in Japan, in Tokyo. And they are like sort of two paths to a very similar kind of situation. One's the easy one, one's the complex one. So both of these people don't live in Japan, okay? But they want to buy a family home in Tokyo. One of them, they are like, he's like the wife, they used to live in Japan, wife and family Japanese. He's a foreigner, but they're living in Singapore right now, okay? So, and you know, well, that's where all their employment is, but I think in retirement, they want to move to Japan. So they want to buy a house here and they don't want to Airbnb it or rent it out in the meantime because they still come to Japan maybe, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 months a year. They spend time here and they don't need to rent it out. They just want a place for themselves for every time they come. And they're looking at getting a mortgage in Japan. And so this is actually two people in this very, very similar scenario, okay? One is in America and one's in Singapore. The guy in Singapore, he's fully employed by a Singapore entity. There's no income coming into Japan. Okay. And no income declared and no residency in Japan. So essentially for that person, it's not possible to get a home loan in Japan without being resident here and without having employment income here. Okay. They're going to say, why do you need a home loan for a country you don't live in? Or even if you do live here, well, you're not employed, so you don't meet those requirements. So you cannot get a dual house loan.
No recourse for the lender, right?
Yeah. Precisely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's stuck because Japan looks at a lot of paperwork and this one sort of doesn't make sense. They understand that he wants to come and live here several times, but it's complex. If he wants to get an investment loan, again, that's hard for people that don't live here. He's looking at some foreign banks that may do it for like 50%. They'll cover like 40 to 50%. Sorry, so they want a 40 to 50% down payment and interest rates closer to 4%, 3 to 4%. But still, he can get maybe 50% financing from I think it's a Singaporean bank for an investment. You do need to be a bit wealthy over there in order to qualify for that. They don't give it to just anyone for small amounts. The other scenario is sort of the person is in the same situation, but he's actually employed by a Japanese company. He was employed locally in Japan with him. Like he's an American, but he's again, wife and kids are Japanese. And he was employed by a Japanese entity and then sent to the US to work. So he's still actually enrolled in the Japan pension scheme, like Shakai Hoken. And so his company pays most of his money overseas, and he has just a minimal amount that gets paid locally and is currently the Shakai Hoken, the employment insurance in Japan. He doesn't live here though. He doesn't have residency here. But however, when he comes back in his situation, and he's planning to move back to Japan, like he's time is wrapping up. When he comes back to Japan, he's going to be eligible for a loan basically right away because he has residency and has employment. And although he's been living overseas for some time, it's the same employer. Okay, so he basically comes back and says, okay, how long have you been employed at this company that sent you overseas? He goes, oh, I've been there for 6 years.
Plus the paycheck is from a Japanese company. That's a big difference.
Yeah. And even they'll say, look, what was your pay for the past, 2 years? Like they look at your previous year's tax withholding slip, your tax statement. He's like, I was overseas. So in Japan, I wasn't paid anything. Or I was paid like, a few hundred thousand yen or whatever minimal amount it was. This is what I was paid in the US. But my employment contract, so now I'm getting paid this much, like locally. And the bank may ask for 2 or 3 months worth of pay statements or just a contract. But basically from when you come back or within, the first, 2, 3 months, which is how long it takes to settle, you'll be able to get a local home loan as though you've been here the whole time. So that was just sort of strange because I don't often get inquiries from people overseas like that are sort of coming back to move and want to buy at the same time. And the first guy I felt quite bad for because you're not able to get the financing, even though his story is very similar. But the other guy who was still employed by a Japanese entity, he's in a really, really great position. So that's how it is. There's a lot of checkboxes in Japan.
So they look at the income earned overseas as income. His ability to service a loan, basically.
No, they won't really look at that. So let me give you another example. Someone who lives in Japan. Okay, I mean, the two big ones are live in Japan, Japan residency and Japan local source income. Okay. The challenging one is someone who lives here, or let's say they work remotely for a company in the US. Okay. So they're getting paid there and there's no local entity that's paying them. Even if they're remitting funds to Japan and they are paying tax on it legally, everything meets the tax requirements. When they go to the tax office, when they go to the bank, they'll say, where are you employed? I'm employed at,
Google.
eBay America or whatever, limited in the US. And they're like, well, that's not a local entity. You're not employed locally. So it's very, very hard to get financing in that regard, even if they're declaring income locally. Okay, that's very, very challenging. There might be one bank that can do it, but even then you'll need to have permanent residency. But in the case with that, my first example, this person is employed by a local Japanese entity that's paying him overseas. So he's actually enrolled in the Shakai Hoken. So from the moment he comes, they'll actually care more about what his future income is.
Yeah. Okay. So, stable employer all of this time. That's what they look.
Yeah. Yeah. So they'll look. Okay, you've been employed by the same employer for 6 years, and they'll say, look, it's in U.S. dollar, and maybe it was a special project or special assignment, so you get paid a bit different. What are you going to be getting paid now? Because we're giving you a home loan from today moving forward. What are you being paid now moving forward? Is it more or is it less? All right. And even if it's more, they'll go up, if necessary. Right. So it can work in your favor. It's not necessarily going to be less, but they will look at that in the same way that usually when they look at the previous year's tax withholding slips, it's because people's employment income hasn't changed so much. If they're just irregularly employed by the same company every year, it's not going to be a huge difference, maybe a few percent, not enough to impact the loan significantly. So there are a few different scenarios. That's why I've been getting a lot of these inquiries recently. I think a lot of people actually from the podcast and from these videos. So please, if you are listening, feel free to shoot me an email or a message. I think the link's in the description, or Zib will spell it out for you.
Yeah, but bear in mind that in these scenarios, this is half of the answers that we have to give to people is like, no, unfortunately, you're not eligible for a loan in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, well, so there's also the strategy for it, though. Like, so for example, knowing what you are eligible for or knowing how it works helps you plan. So, for example, the one person who's not eligible for that for the home loan, says, okay, their strategies once they move to Japan and they start working for, you know, 6 months at the new company or 12 months or 18 months, then they will be eligible. And that's often the case if they have a Japanese spouse or if they have permanent residency. But if they don't have a Japanese spouse or permanent residency, then yeah, no, it's going to be a long haul. Or look, you're going to need to be working here for 12 months and you need 20% down payments. So even if the answer is no, like right now you don't live here and you don't work here, so of course that's a no. It's like, well, but you, if they are, obviously if they're planning to buy their own personal home or family home, as opposed to like one of your clients, Ziv, which is purely just an investment, a small apartment, not really for themselves, for the most part, at least knowing when you do come here, what is the approach you should take, right? What are the steps you should take? Because just be like, oh, no, that's it. Well, hold on. Maybe someone only has to be here for 3 months or 6 months. Maybe someone has to be here for 1 year or 2 years. And even knowing what sort of employment you should try to get or try to structure when you get here. Should you be freelance or should you just take some companies offer, look, do you want to be like as a contractor or do you want to be a permanent employee? And if the idea is, look, I want to buy a house, then this option, this strategy, that strategy, that, like these are the things that you should try to set up and arrange. Yeah, to plan. Because, okay, now may not be an option, but let's try to do it in the most reasonable amount of time. And whether you want to put a 20% deposit or no, or 100% financing, that's also part of the strategy. So we have lots of things to discuss. So yeah, yeah. If you're not sure, please reach out.
Another option, one of my clients, they're here part-time and they, you know, they're here a couple of months of the year, and then the other couple of months of the year I do short-term rentals with them. But what they did to be creative and they leveraged their existing house mortgage in America and was able to gather the finance there and pay cash for a house in Tokyo for 50 million yen. It was an older house, very serviceable. It does the job. You know, obviously not new and shiny, but there are houses that you can, houses and land that you can buy for 50 million yen.
Viable for homeowners, but for investment properties, it gets a bit tricky because the interest rates overseas are a lot higher than they are here.
Sure.
If you're paying 4% interest on a property that might be making 5 or 6% in the expense, you're always in danger of slipping into that negative gearing territory, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it's just, you know, what other people have done that has made sense for them. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm not an accountant, I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, under those caveats, there are some, you know, creative ways that you can, if you're desperate to have a roots in Japan for whatever reason. This particular family, obviously, one spouse is Japanese, and they want their kids to have that bicultural experience. The best way was to, you know, buy a property here that was then just paying for itself rather than being an investment and making money. So it's really a personal choice.
Yeah, speaking of investments, you had some article you wanted to share with us today, right, Tracy?
I did. I kept putting myself on mute because there's horrible, horrible, horrible construction going on in the building next door and they drive me nuts.
Did you end up getting compensated for that, by the way? No.
I haven't applied and, you know, it's a long convoluted story. So on this apartment, on this office. But what struck me on the news today, it just came through on the news today, and so by the time this is... by the time this recording comes out, it might be out for a little while, but there's a US company has invested in, has bought the Onsen Group. So I put the link in the chat and you can probably put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm reading it now, yeah.
You're reading it now. It's quite interesting, really.
You can share the screen if you want, Tracy.
I can share the screen. Excellent. I can do that. Let's have a look.
US fund to acquire Ueda Onsen Monogatari.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a very famous tourist attraction that most tourists, when they come, will want to go and have. It's like a theme park onsen. But what struck me that is that they actually have a number of ryokans and onsen hotels throughout Japan. So they operate as many as 40 of these theme parks across Japan, and you know, they've, because of the, you know, before the pandemic, they were, you know, everything was great, but because all the tourists died, you know, the tourist industry died, they're now, they're at a 10.7 billion loss. And so they're offloading that to an American group who are obviously getting the whole lot. So they're getting this tourist attraction, and they're also getting all of these rural properties, and owning them for it's quite a considerable fund, a size deal. So they're obviously bullish about the market coming back, but it just interesting to see what people thought of that.
Yeah, we've cooperated with this is pre-pandemic, with a Hong Kong-based fund, Odyssey, that actually set up a Japan hospitality fund, doing exactly that. So they were buying, not necessarily distressed, but definitely underutilized onsens and machias and even old business hotels that they could then reposition as luxury properties. And they were doing very well, of course, until the pandemic hit. These days, I think they're probably more in buying mode now because there are distressed properties on the market. But yeah, income-wise, I think anybody who's entering hospitality properties and is aiming to make money in the next year or two is probably in a bit of a pickle.
I'm still on mute. So I just thought, I mean, obviously they're buying the debt as well. So, you know, this group from the US, they're buying the debt, but,
it's... Well, if they're buying it now, they're probably planning to not even, I mean, it'll take them some time to kickstart operations. So they're probably hoping that the pandemic will blow over by then.
It's just the biggest deal that I've seen in a little while. They're not just buying that flagship property, which is the theme park onsen at Odaiba, but they're getting 40 hot spring inns and hotels throughout
the whole company. They're buying a whole company, not just
throughout Japan. So that's really interesting that they're doing that, because there are and if their business model was buying up all of these resorts, then there's plenty more to be had. I wish Matt was here to give his take on it. You went to an onsen, just an abandoned onsen recently, Sim. Is that right?
I did. Yeah, I like to explore these abandoned spots in Japan. And one of them was an onsen hotel. It was huge, actually. Four floors, three large onsens on the bottom floor, and plenty of guest rooms. And it's just sitting there, growing vines and stuff. It's a beautiful spot. But yeah, and there are a lot of them out there. We regularly get contacted by people who are looking for that. And the deals are definitely there, and they're pretty easy to buy, and they're pretty cheap to buy. The problem starts when you actually want to run this thing. If you're not living in Japan, I wouldn't even think about it. But people have this fantasy of, you know, being able to do this kind of business remotely, and it's just not possible.
No. It's tough having Airbnb remotely.
Yeah, but do they buy the water rights as well, like the rights to the spring?
Because you pay for that. There's a monthly annual fee.
Monthly annual fee.
Yeah, and then, I mean, monthly or annual, you can pay it by the year or by the month, and then you get access to the onsen water infrastructure that gets pumped into the property.
Okay. So, and then, of course, onsen, this is for people who are watching this, onsens are so highly regulated here, and they're people get licensed on, and they get a certificate on what is the chemical composition or the mineral composition of each one, and it's always up on the wall of the onsen about this spring has been licensed, accredited for so many percentages of sulfur and all the other minerals, and it's good for everything from, I don't know, a sore head to a broken bone. But
I used to be dubious about that, but my wife introduced me to some high quality onsens, and when you come out of that water, you can feel it on your skin. It's amazing.
The placebo effect.
No, definitely not. I know my skin.
There was a sports club, not like in Setagaya, which actually they have black onsen water. Ooh. I think it was it wasn't Tipnets, it was one of those big ones, right? There's a pool of senior citizens, but I get like sometimes a casual drop-in membership. It was included with my health insurance for like 1,000 yen per visit. And it's just, so it's like the big sort of ofuro, and the water's just black. And there's an explanation about what the details about why it's black, but it gets sort of shipped over. It was really nice. Like after going there, I'm like, oh, okay, it's not just a hot, murky bath. Because when you go in just an ordinary hot bathtub, like, you know, I sometimes jump in the bath with my kids after they've been in there, like, Jesus Christ, yeah, no, it's not the same.
No,
it's not the same.
Yeah. You can smell it too, and the high sulfur concentration ones, you can really smell it when you're in there.
Yeah, but the black one was really interesting.
Look, I love an onsen. I think onsen is an onsen culture here, especially in the country, is just, you know, it's just so delightful. And
it's amazing.
And my son, who's 11, has been going to onsen since he was a baby. He loves a good onsen. And I always find it amusing because I look after a lot of tourists when they come into town, and it's just like, oh, I couldn't be naked with everybody. That's just like, when you get over that, it's not usual in the Western culture to be, in a big room naked with lots of people.
It depends on the Western culture. My European guests who come here usually don't have a problem with that at all. It's not mainly
it's just the
Americans.
Americans
don't. Oh, Australians are
like, it took me a little while just to be like, all right with it. Like now I'm completely fine. But yeah, to be honest, like, well, like, hey, like we went on a ski trip to Nozawa, like this is with some mates last year. And like, the idea of, oh, hey, like me and the boys, hey, let's just go hot spring hopping. We'll go from one hot spring to like, hey, just all just get naked and go in a little bathtub together with my mates.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't do that in Australia. Hey, guys, do you let's all get stripped naked? Or if we have
a... It's not part of the culture in Australia.
Someone's got a jacuzzi in their house. One of the guys jumps in naked. Everyone's jumping out.
Yeah.
There's... It takes a while because
awesome. My son, like yours, Tracy, my son's 12 and he just loves it. Whenever we go for a drive, he's like, how many onsens are we stopping at today? But he freaks out. He's actually too Japanese because he freaks out about my tattoos every time we walk into an onsen. Like, Dad, you got to hide it. We got to put the towel here and there. Somebody might see. They'll call the cops on you. It's not as bad as that.
See, I didn't know you had tattoos.
I have a bunch of tattoos, yeah.
Only visible in the onsen.
But fortunately they're all on the right side of my body, so if I fling the towel kind of covering all of my right side, they cover all of them, and then everyone's too busy staring at my nether regions to even know.
you're supposed
to hide your genitals, right? Like that's what you're supposed to do in an onsen.
It's like the
once you're over 75, hiding genitals and like trying not to do like just air squats, it goes out the window, because I've seen those guys just do all kinds of amazing stuff.
Yeah, they just fold it and put it on their head from the get-go. They don't even wait until they get in the bath with that.
So let's do a sumo squat, stretch, and cough. the sports club with that black onsen water, that's a couple of eyeful at the same time. It's like, you can't see anyone in there, but when they're out, they're fully out. Where was I? I've got a question. A bit different to what we usually I've got zero experience with it. You guys may have some idea. Tracy, maybe more. And I was really hoping Matt would be here. So how do, I guess, creative spaces, art spaces, share, like a shared office, I can sort of get. But these, like, you know, like Matt, often talks about, look, I want to build sort of a community, like, you know, you want to get a place that, like, community kind of vibe, a place that like maybe has a cafe and also some like creative art spaces. Creatives can go there and make art, make music, design stuff, build it. Like, how does that work? Like, when I say how's that, like, in terms of logistics and financial.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy. Fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits, or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
Right. I know there are some places in Tokyo that are like that. Like they either like a shared office or like, you know, entrepreneurs type of hub. Yeah, they charge by usage. But now I'm talking about like to the creative spaces. So the office, shared office kind of entrepreneur I can get, but these creative kind of hubs.
Like, yeah, but same story. It's like a recording studio. Musicians come there, they pay by the hour or by the month or by the week, however, you know, whatever kind of plan they've got, and they pay for the usage.
Well, and also there's online, you know, online marketplaces for those spaces. Like if you look at Spacey, there's a few other ones. So if you're, and I've used them before, I've been looking for a meeting space that is for, you know, I didn't want people to come to my office. I wanted actually to have an office and a desk and you can rent apartments. And so a lot of when the minpaku laws changed, a lot of these places that were running nighttime accommodation converted to sort of spaces that you could rent by the hour because they're not regulated.
Temporary meeting rooms.
There's a ton of them and obviously different categories of like whether you want whiteboards or whether you want, you know, different amenities. So you can rent it that way. Or there's a lot of people I've seen a couple of places, obviously before the pandemic, that were almost like incubator type things where they had some accommodation that was registered for hotel licenses and they had sort of hot desks that you could do co-working. But they also had sort of lounge rooms, drop-in spaces. And a lot of these were older apartment buildings, so those big concrete ones. And so someone had bought the whole thing and knocked out walls and just converted into to sort of WeWork type of things, WeWork wannabes.
We can get a bunch of these for...
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Supposed to be our next event for the Games and Business Networking thing in supposed to be March in Tokyo. There's some beautiful spaces. But that's unfortunately probably not going to happen if numbers continue to be in the 20,000 daily new cases as they are now.
Yeah. Tokyo is at 4,000 now.
So what prompted that question, Emil? Like, you know, is someone wanting one, someone doing one, or are you just curious?
I've got a space and I'm trying to think of what to do with it. Like Airbnb, minpaku is the standard kind of, like, what is one option and it's been used to that before. The other one is like regular Japanese tenants. So just fixed contract, but I'm like, every time I speak with when we have Matt talk about, you know, Tracy, like you in particular, these kind of want to go and establishing, and I've had clients as well ask me, like, they want a place with like a studio room or studio space for like a creative community. Generally, artists can sort of come together and stuff, but so it's a bit different to like just a one-time fixed rental space as an office space, or come and use it as a photo studio or something. I'm kind of intrigued. This opportunity's come up. Sort of, I had a tenant kind of leave, and now it's like I can do regular sort of stuff. Or why not take the opportunity to just explore this other?
That's avenue? Even more of a hands-on experience than running a short-term rental, I would say, because people are going to be renting by the day or by the hour. It's not even going to be for stays, right?
Well, that's why I was curious, because if it is just straight up, they come and rent just for the hour or whatnot, then I think that's not appealing at all.
Because then
it's just a more complicated rental space.
I wouldn't expect more than a day for your typical rental, maybe 2 or 3 days at most.
Well, yeah, precisely, right? Like it doesn't make sense. But you know, and maybe a decade ago, there was a place near Shirogane Takanawa. It was like some IT. They had, I think they were doing just like free courses or 1,000 yen for a course. You come in and it's like, this is very, really early days, like introduction to iOS coding, make your first iOS app.
It was the hacker, right? It was the hacker farm.
That's it. Those guys, yeah. They were down.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been there. That was the start of the hacker farm. And they've actually moved out to Chiba. So friends of mine have been associated with it for a long time. But what you could do is speak to some of these creative collectives, and there are some. And I can introduce you to a couple of people that I need it. People that do get together and they do, they have their own like little cottage industries. People that do like home, like especially if you have a commercial kitchen and you get it licensed. So someone might want to rent it to do commercial cooking, but they don't want to, you know, they only want to rent it sort of once a month to do their events or whatever. So I would talk to some creative collectives and to see what's around and what they would want and what they would pay for. I mean,
can probably help with that too, like you said.
Matt could probably help. I mean, there are community centers run by like the city. So, and they're usually pretty grim. I mean, but they're very cheap to rent. And there's lots of rules about having to, clean up
after yourself. But Emil, are you up for handling daily rentals and having like at least part-time staffer on board and somebody who actually
be there, right? So that's why if it was like a daily rental type of thing, then no, not at all. Because that's really just the arm's length kind of rent. But like that's I think what you mentioned, like the creative collectives. Because when I went to that hacker space, that was not like a rental kind of thing, and whoever it felt more like a community, really, really a good community. I had a really good vibe about those people, and although I didn't go back, too busy to really follow it up. It was just, and I remember they had like, oh, they just one of the early 3D printers, like we just got this in, and they're going to play with it and stuff, and they just print little stuff like this big, but like you know, just really to explore and stuff. And I thought that was such a good vibe, and
but they were probably tenants. No? They were probably actual tenants, like paying by the month, wouldn't they?
Oh yeah, no. So they
had some. They had some that had desks. They rented desks, and they were people that were doing things like jewelry making, but they were hacking things, and they had sort of shared resources. They didn't want to rent something all of their own, but it was really a communal thing, and they shared a lot of stuff. But
it was within, like, that was with the IT technology kind of space, right? And so even something like that, like, I'm intrigued by it because that's not, because you don't, like, charging people just to come and manage it just one time. Like, you have sort of a regular group of people that can sort of use it regularly. So that was my question, like, and that was actually, I'm glad you sort of jogged my memory about the hackerspace. Because that's a kind of that community. Like, how does that make money? Where does the income come from something like that? Because I think one, you can generate income, which is like technically it's going to be rental; it's for usage. But you're also sort of fostering a community and a network, and it's a like a regular kind of it's a different kind of space than just hey, like 1 hour meeting, like just a half day meeting room for some organization or some private use, that they come in and you have no idea what's going on and there's no particular theme. Whereas, you know, Hackerspace. So I've just, yeah, like the Hackerspace is probably the image that I had because of my one time I visited a place. But I was curious, yeah, how they generate. My question was, how do they make money?
How does Unfortunately, they don't make massive amount of money. It's more that you people are looking to give back to the community. It's a labor of love. It's something. It's sort of in that non-profit realm rather than this is a way to hack. This is a way to be extremely profitable. So there's a different value there. So yes, you need to make money, but you're also getting value to your life, which is not necessarily in cold hard cash.
Yeah, and that's
great. I think that's really.
Yeah, so that's thing. Like in this case, I'm the landlord. I've got this space, and I can just go the Airbnb route or the regular Japanese rental route, and just make just straight up money from it. But I feel there's like, as you said, it's more management time, more headache, more involvement, and less money. But there's that community aspect and giving back and sort of help support people that, you know, in that thing that maybe a handful of them sort of are able to flourish from that opportunity.
I think the best of both worlds for you, Emil, would be to find a really cool community tenant so that you don't need to be hands-on involved. Exactly. And you can still enjoy what they're doing with your space.
And it's mm-hmm. helping them. Yeah, you know, they've already got their agenda. They just, you know, they've got their community and what they want to achieve, but they're just looking for the space. You provide the space. So it's like a, you know,
It's a nice modern house in Shibuya. So if anyone's keen to he's hearing this and is like, hey, let's inquire and tell someone, then yeah, reach out.
I do know some community people, because there was a place called Best Living Japan, and she had Lauren Kawasaki.
Lauren, yes.
She just announced at the beginning of January she's closing Best Living Japan. So there is a hole in the market. So she was running classes and art classes and craft classes, but I think she's
she had a place down in Azabu area.
Yeah, but there's also a lady in my Ninpaku, like the. I'm involved in a Japanese women's community group for hosts. So in Shibuya, so the Shibuya Women's Hosts Collective. No, they're not just women. Sorry, it's just the Shibuya Hosts Collective. They're mostly women. And one of the women, her Minpaku place, actually on the ground floor, she has an art studio. On the middle floor, she's got an art gallery. She's got like two or three Minpaku places that are licensed, and then she lives on the top, and that's her. That's her business.
I was going to say that's another thing that you can do. I'm not sure how big that space is, but we do regularly get contacted by artists who are looking for a mixed place where they can live in and have a studio and have a shop. So ideally three floor small building or like a big space that can be divided into three. There are plenty of people looking for that.
I was just talking to a client, to a possible client yesterday. He's looking to rent something for himself and his wife as an art space to live in as well. So
I think I know who that is. He's looking at buying or renting, right?
No, just renting.
Just renting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm open to different sort of usages to a degree. It doesn't have a shop front. So the guy that you have to go into house.
Artists don't need a traditional shop front.
Yeah, exactly.
They can turn anything into a shop.
I mean, that's right. If it's artists, it's all right. If it's someone else, like they want like a shop front, that doesn't make sense. Like this one's not suitable for it. But in terms of just it's a three bedroom house with a nice open living room. And each of the rooms are nice size, either for offices or the occasional, like, you know, visiting artist that wants to stay and crash overnight, stuff like that. Mine's like, if it's a community space like that, if you use, like, I'm really intrigued by the idea of, you know, having a hub and creating something that provides value to the community, value to certain individuals, an opportunity for them to sort of create when we were, definitely when I was younger, it's like straight up all about the money, all about the dollar. But now it's like, well, hold on, what other, like, you know, as a real estate agent, I like helping people being able to buy their family home, right? That's the reason I do this, because I think it's very, very rewarding. I used to work in IT, enterprise level stuff, and that's not very rewarding, right? That's just corporate. This is rewarding because you're helping individuals buy a home. But now it's like, well, what if I can also, there's an opportunity now just to help individuals sort of create, like, I think especially creatives, because I'm not creative at all. I think, and it's not part of the one, I can sort of get some exposure to it, but also just a space for people to be able to do that. When I went to that hacker space, you know, over a decade ago, I felt, wow, this is such a good vibe. It's just a community of people helping each other sort of just get ahead and learn more and be better, right? All just very, very positive. Nothing about being arrogant and stuff. And just the more you give, the more the net value of everyone sort of grows.
Karma is practical. So, you could also do, yeah. You know what you could do is a themed share house. Those are a big hit in Tokyo, and they're not as involved as short-term stays, because the people who are sharing are obviously there for like at least 6 months at a time usually. And then you make the share house a themed share house. So there are some with pets, some for art, some for music, some for international communication, stuff like that. And then the people who will be attracted to renting this sort of, you know, a room in that space would be the kind of people that you would theme the house as.
Who owns it, Emil? Is it like your house?
Me, yeah, I put control.
All right, I'll put you in touch with this chap I was talking to yesterday.
And I wish I saw Lauren as well. Yeah, she was actually one person in mind that, because I knew she had a similar kind of thing. And she was also, I hadn't been to her space, but she was also someone who had an idea about reaching out to inquire. It was like yourself and her were the two I was going to reach out to get an idea. And I'm kind of curious about it now. I've got this opportunity that it's sort of vacant. And it's like, oh, the location's fantastic. And it's, I don't have to deal with
it. It's a really good landlord. Location, that house. That's a, that yeah, Hatsudai house. It's fantastic, right? Hatsudai, Hatagaya. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's like, you know, Shibuya Ward, it's like, what, three, like, well, you can like 25-minute walk to Shinjuku, I can, you can do the walk, but it's two short stops of 4 minutes on the train to Shinjuku. There's a bus that goes straight to Shibuya. Access for it, so it's fantastic. There's driveways, so lots of bicycles can park out the front. Lots of space in the front of it. So the more I think about it, the more I think, oh, this actually kind of makes sense. Have you been inside, Tracy?
Haven't been inside. Okay. Yeah, but that particular chap I was talking to yesterday, you know, I was actually saying, you know, I was almost going to introduce him to you anyway, because, you know, because he was going to be here for a while, and he's Seishin, and it, you know. You know, if you're looking at spending this much per month, why aren't you looking at possibly buying something? But he got, you know, that wasn't something he was interested in. And that's totally fine. Not everyone is in that buying mindset.
So, Claire, please, raise your hand. Because, like I say, it's just an idea, and honestly, it's almost like a pipe dream. Because also, I can't give it out for free, of course. I'm not that. You know, and he needs to pay his bills and also make some money to a degree.
That's not what I heard, Emil.
And because I know what I can get for rental. Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, that's it for me. I've been speaking a lot. But,
Emil is Batman. The night he goes robbing.
Carry on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we've been going nearly an hour already. So I guess I'd like to sort of hear from people who are watching, you know, the three people who watch our show, what they're wanting to talk about, because I have a friend who's just started up a reform company, and so I thought that might be an interesting interesting conversation to hear about what's involved in, you know, getting old places and reforming them. And
I would love to, he or a she or a...
It's a she. She's just started, she's not doing actual reforming. She's hooked up with she found a contractor to do the reform on her place. And then
can
now
I just
they've
jump
actually
in
gone,
yeah? And say renovation.
Ah, gomenne. Sorry.
For the listeners who are like, what is reform? in Japan,
budgetary renovation. Reform, yeah,
yeah, renovation. In Japan, they say reform. So the Japanese English expression for a renovation is reform. So when we talk about renovation company, they come in, they change the wallpaper, they can, you know, move walls around, modify your kitchen, update your kitchen, toilets, that stuff. The renovation company in Japan, in Japanese, say reform.
I'd love to have her on the show, and to be honest with you, if she's up for it, I'd love to have her as a regular, because we always get these kinds of topics and questions.
Well, she's the thing is, it'll be interesting to track the journey, because she's just started up this business. She's always had a real interest in real estate and as a to own, to buy, to sell, you know, as a, but this is the first time she's actually gone in and, you know, put, you know, put some bucks behind it and actually running a renovation company. So, but she's hooked up with a Japanese-based contractor who was working for a reform company and now wanted to sort of be more freelance. So that's a, you know, she wanted to work with someone who had the hustle and wanted to collaborate. So I'd be really interested to hear, first of all, how they source properties. You know, I mean, is this the start of a flipping, you know, a flipping buy and flip type of arrangement? That would be a really interesting culture to, that doesn't exist right now. So,
My, well, just while we talk about renovation and whatnot, my understanding, so our office, the agency, we have a renovation team, and it's more so like not a bit different. We're not a renovation company. We don't do just straight up, we can, but that's not really the reason it started. Because we have almost now 1,000 properties under rental management. We have about over 10 move outs every week. And so all just the cleaning and rewarding and stuff, we brought it all in house and general maintenance and things. And then they like, you know, kitchen changes and what have you. And also for clients that are buying used properties, maybe they want to change the wallpaper or update the kitchen. So we, it's sort of an add on to our sort of existing kind of service. If someone says, you know, just straight up, like they won't just Google, hey, renovations Tokyo and find us. That's not really our target. But yeah, it'll be interesting to talk to someone about that. But one thing I know is, I think I was talking to our boss, I'm not too engaged with the renovation people, to be honest, is though, if it's over, I think 10 million yen, so $100,000 of renovation, you need a separate license. Like if you want to do like a mass scale renovation, you need to be licensed by, you need to have a member of staff has to have been, has to meet certain requirements and certain experience requirements, because it's almost like a construction. So yeah, that's something that's interesting. So a lot of the renovation companies that don't meet that, like they're not doing, they can't really build a house or do massive sort of restructural changes. But I'm guessing most people like that are doing that, that are inquiring about that, probably are not going to spend that much anyway. They went, hey, want a new kitchen? We want to change the toilet. Look, let's re-wallpaper the house. I want to knock down this wall so I have just more open room between this bedroom and that bedroom. We don't need that wall. The kids have moved out. Instead of 2 5-to-5-drawer rooms, we want a nice 10-drawer room and no tatami. Stuff like that, I think, yeah, fantastic.
That licensing sounds like really easy to get around. I mean, right? You could just structure it as two renovations, right? You do a phase one, phase two, and they're both under 100 million.
This is being recorded. Be very careful.
I'm sure they're doing it, though.
Yes, definitely. But at the same time, if you're a customer, I'm giving you like $120,000.
Yeah.
But you're not licensed. Like, yeah, if I'm spending that much, I want a company that can do it. It's not like, oh, it's between like 180,000 yen and 230,000 yen. I'm going to go with a cheaper buy.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're licensed plumber, just a toilet replacement. So they don't need, like, you know, no, I think, yeah, anyone who's in that isn't going to do it. So yes, technically there's a workaround, but I don't think that, I think the client will also.
And like you said, depends on renovation. If you're getting a big job, you want,
The topic of renovation is just massive, because you know, you can get an additional loan to, if you are doing a massive regut and, you know, doing a, you can get a renovation loan on with a bank.
Oh, thank you. Before we go, wait, that's a question I wanted to ask you. Emil,
I was in the middle of a thought.
I think it's the same thought. You finish yours, and then I probably got the exact same question.
And I was about to answer both your thoughts. Carry on, go.
But also the other thing that you see companies do is that they buy the whole building, and then they renovate, and then especially old mansion buildings, and then they make them pretty and new and shiny, and then to get extra life out of them. So you can pick up, obviously you can't do short-term rentals with these, but you know, if you want to buy a renovated apartment, you do get more room, like, because usually the older places have higher ceilings and they're bigger spaces, but they've been completely redone by a reform or renovation company. That was the end of my thought.
I was going to ask, because somebody asked me just this week, so I know you can get a loan to buy a home, investment home or owner occupied home, and I know that you can get a loan to build a home, but can you get a loan to buy an old home and also include the renovation cost in the normal mortgage?
Yes, you can.
You can,
yeah. So what we do, and this is also why we have the renovation team sort of within our office, is, you know, and we have, so some clients, they buy like a used apartment, maybe it's like, 15 years old. And generally with the wet areas, kitchen, bathroom, toilet, and also wallpaper, after about 10, say 15 years of pretty moderate usage, you'd want to change those, right? When they say you buy a place 15 years old and go, look, okay, I want all the wallpaper and the new toilet, bathroom, kitchen, maybe say like 5 million yen, 6 million yen, 2 million yen, or however much you want to spend. We can get the quote and put that with the mortgage, the purchase application. So let's say the property is, 55 million yen, and you have another 5 million yen of renovation, which we've got a quote for. We do the application together and say, okay, we want 55 for the house, 5 million for renovation, and say, 3 million yen for closing costs. You put that through and they each will get assessed. But it's generally sort of one combined mortgage. Renovations can be included. Sorry, what was that?
Do most lenders do that?
Yeah.
Yep. Perfect.
That's very, very common for like the mega banks that we deal with. On the assumption that it's a standard property that, like, often it's apartments or maybe a house. And the renovation that you're doing is typical renovation, not massive structural change, like, new bathrooms, toilets, kitchen, wallpaper, electrical outlets, maybe flooring, etc. Maybe outside sort of cleaning and outside maintenance if the house is 15 years old and has never been maintained. Stuff like that. I heard that it's not more than 20% the property value. So if it's 50 million yen for the house or the apartment, then they won't give you more than 10 million yen for the renovation.
It's nice because the interest rate is at your normal jutaku interest rate, whatever you rather than think in Australia, or when you're doing a renovation loan, that's actually at a slightly different interest rate. So
and I get some people that say, sometimes just mentally exhausted, which I can fully understand because I'm with them all the whole step of the way, and it's mentally exhausting for me as well. They say, look, you know what? We'll just move in and we'll do the renovation next year. It's like, okay, you can do that, but getting the loan is going to be more, then you get more headache because you've got to do the loan and your interest rate is going to be higher. I don't know if it's like 1.5, 2%. It's not just included within the home loan itself. So just something to keep in mind. But that is definitely an option and a good one at that.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's probably a good place to stop. Thanks so much. I think everyone's got a hard stop today, right? So.
Yep.
I'm soft.
Sorry?
I've got a soft stop. Yeah, I'm soft.
Too much
I've
information again. Maybe we don't
stop.
I got a 3 o'clock. This is a good place.
I've got a bit of time. Cool. Yeah. All right. Let's wrap it up. Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks so much for your pointers as well, guys, about my creative creative club. That.
I love it.
Come back, Matt. Yeah. We miss you.
Yeah. We want more stories and goats.
Ziv, if the space is ready, you guys can maybe hit that up for your board game night.
That would be very good, actually. But how many bedrooms do you have? Three. Okay. Well, we could maybe strike a deal with a hotel next door or something. We'll work it out.
Yeah, really, just a combination. There's a Sakura house not far away, like a Hotel.
Okay.
Sakura Hotel, like, yeah, backpack or lodging type.
Perfect. Well, if you could just bring Corona numbers down a bit, we'll be there.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it? And Zip, I'm actually, if you need my assistance in Kyoto, if you think that there's some budget there for production assistant to help with the marketing on those properties, the short-term rentals.
Well, once we have all the videos and photos done, then we'll start talking about what's the best way to promote. So definitely.
Well, have they decided who their target market? Have they done their pre-photo shoot? Because you should figure out who you're trying to market to before
we're
you take
creating
a photo shoot.
We're creating a few. So we're going to be creating one master video, which will include the interview with the fund manager and about the history and the renovation of the property in Kyoto and all of that. And then we're going to also do four or five separate short videos marketing to friends groups, to couples, to workation people, to families, and so forth. Okay. So interesting.
All right.
See how we go. My first production gig. All right. Thanks for your time, guys.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye. Bye-bye.
All right, so as advertised, nice long deep dive into a bunch of property investment topics. Trust you've enjoyed it. And if you're interested in the last part of the conversation regarding renovations, rebuilds, etc., spoiler alert, we're soon going to have a renovation expert join the panel. We're expanding, so you can expect a lot more of these types of conversations and at far more depth starting in a few weeks' time. Watch this space. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead.